We'll call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. The clerk will note the roll as people come in as well. The first item on the agenda is the minutes of the Ways and Means meeting of April 24th. Representative Hamilton, you studied them?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the minutes.
Minutes have been moved. Any questions, corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Members, we'll try to be jumping around a little bit on the agenda today. And we do not have House File 8 in our possession yet. We'll have it as of this afternoon when we get it reported to the House floor. We will put that towards the end of the agenda, and if we have time, we will try to hear that for any concerns that you may have. We will not be able to pass it because we do not have it in our agenda for today. I know that, that there are people that are interested in that provision. It's received an awful lot of different hearings on it. I think it's probably less controversial now, but there's still we want to have people have an opportunity to be able to hear the concerns or offer any amendments that are appropriate. So we'll put that towards the end of the meeting if we have time. Yes, Representative Holbrook.
Is there any intent to reconvene after session to dispense with that, or?
I don't know. Everything is fluid right now. We will adjourn, or we will recess, and we'll just see how things go. And if we can, we will reconvene if we have time. And if we want to have the conference committees to be meeting. And so this is one that if necessary, we would probably take it up on Tuesday evening or Wednesday evening as well. But if we can get the discussion out of the way today, it's important. It'll save us some time. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move and reconsider the minutes. And on the minutes, it says a quorum of President Representative Hamilton moved minutes April 22nd, and then it's and then correct the motion.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if we can do that.
We have a misspelling. Okay, well, let's reconsider the motion.
Mr. Chairman, that's how I spell it, so that's why I'd like to reconsider the
okay.
Minutes, make the correction.
Minutes are reconsidered. All those in favor of reconsideration, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Well, amendment to the amendment. The minutes are before us. The amendment is, let's Representative Hamilton now move the minutes, then we'll get those before us, have them before us. Now an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the minutes, put them before us, and make the correction under Representative Hamilton move the minutes, and change motion so it is spelled correctly.
In two different places.
In two different places. Like I said, that's the way I spell it. So.
All those understand the amendment, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Now, the amendments are before us as corrected. Those in favor of the minutes as corrected signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Okay, thank you, Representative Davis. We'll, next time we'll have you move them because you will be reading them. Okay?
Very cool.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we'll do that next time. Okay, the first one we're going to pick up today is Representative Bunce. Representative Bunce, you have a motion before us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that we pass House File 1221 and send it to the General Register.
Representative Bunn moves that House File 1221 be recommended to pass and place in the General Register. Okay, Representative Bunn, there's a fiscal note, but it's zero, but there is some money in this one. That's why it's here. You want to explain your bill?
There's a fiscal note. There's no money currently in this. The reason it's before your committee because it creates an account, and that requires it goes to Finance and Ways and Means. Members, this is a bill that is related to the overall project to build a new river crossing across the St. Croix River near where currently it crosses at Highway 36. Well, not now, where it currently crosses, to replace the Stillwater Lift Bridge. This project is underway and moving forward. Currently, it's planned to be built in 2013. If everything goes smoothly, what this bill is part of the mitigation agreement surrounding the building of that new bridge crossing. One of the requirements of the mitigation agreement is the attention to the old Stillwater Lift Bridge. This account is in relation to the old Stillwater Lift Bridge. The old Stillwater Lift Bridge, when the new crossing has been completed, will be converted to a biking and pedestrian bridge only and will become part of a loop trail for biking and hiking. What this bill does is it creates an account in our state treasury, later to determine exactly where it goes, that will be allowed to accept federal funds, state funds, and also gifts from individuals and organizations to support the future regular maintenance and operation of this bridge. Not huge major repairs, but the regular annual maintenance operation, including the lift operator for the bridge. So what this does is it creates that account as part of the mitigation agreement. It then we address certain issues related to it in the finance committee, which is number one, that the legislator receives reports back as to the status of these funds and accounts on a regular basis. Number two, to clarify what would happen if for any reason this bridge would have to be demolished eventually, that while the government funds that were in the account would be used for the purpose of demolition, any private funds that had been donated for historical buffs, that their funds would not go towards demolition but be transferred for other historical bridge preservation if that were to occur, and we hope it wouldn't occur. So basically that's what this does, and I remain open for questions.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bunn, is it your intent that this would only, this money that if it was available for historic bridges be only for Minnesota historic bridges?
On page 2, line 18,
it just says historic bridges, and given that we might have federal money and Wisconsin money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering what your intent
is. I had assumed it would be Minnesota, and the folks from DOT, Decision Agency Bill, are shaking their heads that they also assumed it was Minnesota. So I would be certainly open to incorporate a friendly amendment to put in the word Minnesota, if that would make you feel more comfortable.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you could accomplish that by inserting the word Minnesota in between historic and bridges.
On line 18, council, that helps to clarify or just...
Mr. Chairman, that would clarify it. However, it says at the end of the sentence that it's the State Historic Preservation Office, which is the Minnesota office.
I'm just worried that we may commingle federal funds and Wisconsin funds. And
well, Representative Holberg makes a motion. Line
2.18, between other and historic, add the word Minnesota. Everyone understand the amendment by Representative Holberg? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Any other questions? Any other questions? Okay, Representative Bunn then renews her motion that House File 1221, as amended, be recommended to pass, placed on the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next one on the agenda then is Representative Eakin.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
See a fiscal note.
Well, let's see what the situation is on that. Representative Eakin, you want to move your bill first?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to move that House File 1237 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Do you want to explain your bill and then see where the fiscal note is on this one? I don't have it in my copy either.
And I do have a copy here.
We'll
make a
check
copy
with
of
staff.
It. But, Mr. Chair and members, This is the
okay, DNR. Just 1 second. Maybe we can have some staff clarify what, why we don't have a fiscal note here. Mr. Mark?
Mr. Chair, just a second here. There have been fiscal notes done on previous versions of this bill. We requested one on the latest version, and I believe we don't have that one completed yet. I'm not sure just what has changed on it, if anything that affected the money. So we need to check here.
Okay. Well, while they're checking, would you like to explain your bill?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the DNR and Bowser Technical and Policy Bill. The only provisions that deal with fiscal issues is one that waives fees on school buses to state parks. And the cost is minimal. The last fiscal note that was issued on this provision says that it would be about $5,000. They're estimating about 1,000 buses at about $5.
Representative Eakin, can you give us the citation of that in your bill?
Sure. It would be on page 5. line 5.15.
Okay.
School sanctioned activities. And they would be able to absorb the cost in the state park fund for that. And the only other cost that may accrue would be for, and let's see, that would be on page 8. Section 19, line 8.4, where there are 3 additional members added to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. It was 12 members. This would increase it to 15, and it would include a representative of the township and 2 from the cities, one of whom would have to come from the metropolitan area. The general makeup of the Board of Water and Soil Resources would remain the same as far as the split between rural and metro. But this would simply add cities and townships to the mix who are currently not represented on the board. And again, the cost was minimal, and the board would be able to absorb the costs for the per diem and travel that would be associated. They're estimating that the cost per board member would be about $3,850 per year.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eakin, it seems as though everything that you've mentioned is a special revenue fund. Were there any general fund costs ever identified in this bill?
No.
Representative Eakin.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, no, I believe it's just those two.
All right, thank you.
Clarification on the fiscal notes is, are we satisfied that what Representative Eakin stated is the fiscal cost? I'm looking through this. I think that's the case. So, any other discussion on the bill itself? Any other discussion on the bill itself? If not, Representative Eakin then renews his motion. The House File 1237 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay. Next one on the agenda then, Representative Nelson, Swales, I guess, is next. Atkins is not here right now, so Representative Swales. We do have a... Representative Swales, would you like to make a motion, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1665 to be placed on the General Register, I believe.
And that's correct. Recommend a pass and place on General Register. And welcome to the committee, and I see you have your co-author with you.
Yes, I do.
Awesome. Do you want to just give a brief overview of the bill and why it was here?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, House File 1665 is the result of a work group that Representative McFarland and I co-chaired on shared services and procurement, I can hardly say that. Chair Greiling of the Education Finance Committee asked us to do this, and it became 6 weeks of intensive work inviting stakeholders from around the state to join us, and each week we concentrated on a different strand related to shared services. And what Representative McFarland and I discovered is that there is a tremendous amount of this going on already throughout the state. Our first session, we really did devote that to food services. Students across the state need to have inexpensive lunches and meals, and this can really eat up a lot of a school district's budget. And what we discovered is that there is a food purchasing group that consists of 77 districts all the way from Moorhead down to the most southern counties of our state. And they, through this bulk purchasing, are able to save hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. The next week, we focused on transportation routing systems. We discovered that there are several areas in the state that have gone to this kind of software. It saves a lot of unnecessary trips, and it economizes what school districts have to spend on transportation and fuel costs. Then we focused on IT, and we looked at a variety of operation interoperability frameworks that are used in the state, and we looked at other states where they are already being used very successfully, such as in Wyoming and Oklahoma, and we were able to discover that we are in the beginning stages of creating that framework, but what we need is some sort of an overall umbrella that allows school districts to be able to talk to one another and to the Department of Education. And so Representative McFarland and I are pretty excited now that we have found that the Education Commission of the state, which is represented across the nation, and Governor Plenty is the current chair, they are talking with us about how we can get their assistance to make that a reality across our state. Representative McFarland and I also went to Marshall, Minnesota, which is where Representative Seifert is from, and he joined us that day as we met with the Southwest Service Cooperative. We had the opportunity to visit with 30 different superintendents from that area of the state, and they were very, very excited about our bill and our proposal, and really want to be a showcase to the state of what best practices are in this area might consist of. I toured the Tithe building and had an electronic tour of what they are already doing in terms of shared services. And we have been invited this summer to talk to a national organization about this very issue. So the work that we've done, listening to stakeholders, traveling across the state, looking at what is already going on, I think has led us to this particular bill. Briefly, what it does, it sets up a best practices website through the state auditor's office. The reason it's here in Ways and Means is that there is an $11,000 startup cost and $4,000 each year to maintain it. But the way the bill is written, we would be seeking funds from non-governmental agencies or nonprofit organizations to help pay for the setup costs of this. Now, if it's all right, Mr. Chair, I would like Representative McFarland to maybe just add a little bit to what
you said. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I wanted to share that TIDES did a report of 75% of the school districts across the state showing what they are currently doing in shared services. Also, the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce has been working on this for the past 5 to 6 years, and they have this spreadsheet in very small print that shows all the shared services that are happening between the cities and the county and the school districts within Ramsey County. So it's proof that there's a lot of shared services already happening. What's happening is many times people can't get connected to that. We have also talked to the Commissioner of Administration. This site would also connect people to that.
Also, I would like to say that when we visited with State Auditor Rebecca Otto, she said it would not cost any more to expand this to other forms of government in the state. So we decided to expand it to cover townships, towns, cities, counties, and the state. So while this is maybe not the final answer, it's a step towards what we're looking for. We want to find a resource that helps people connect to what other people are doing in the state. This also follows behind the 2004 State Auditor's Best Practice Review on Cooperative Efforts in Public Service Delivery and the 2005 on Contracting for Services and Procurement. It's just one step that continues that process.
Okay, any questions? The fiscal staff went up to get the old Cisco note.
We do have a copy of it, Mr.
And he's coming down. Representative Holbrook.
Sir, I have three questions. The fiscal note, if we're giving the state auditor a job, I don't know why this didn't go to state government finance. And then
It did.
Then why isn't it on here?
Well, we refer to the finance. I don't know why. Representative.
We refer to finance and then refer in finance to the state government.
Okay.
All right, and then this is my concern with this, is how are you going to factor for conflicts of interest? In other words, if you are letting private entities donate money to provide for this process, how do you stop the problem of the company that sells widget A that's going to be a great thing for government being the ones that actually fund the website that will have the potential to benefit their bottom line versus other companies?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, this will not be connecting anybody to the actual vendor. It will be basically connecting to the other units, and it's kind of like being able to Google at a state site of what others are doing, and that would be up to people to go to that site, to those people, and ask what they're doing, and it's a connector.
So, Mr. Chair, and Representative Farley,
call me anything you want, just don't call me late for supper.
I get that, but I just think you have an inherent conflict of interest if you're setting up a website that's going to provide information on products for various businesses, and the businesses are the ones that are going to be funding that.
Representative McFarland.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, we're looking at organizations like the Minnesota School Board Association, maybe the Association of Counties, places like that, not necessarily individual vendors.
Ms. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Chair, I think that you just say non-government sources. You don't talk anything here about conflicts of interest, et cetera, and I think that we as a state should not be providing the portal for private business to be able to have a preferred treatment, if you will, by being listed as a preferred vendor or whatever. I believe that's a conflict, so I'm not sure that this is fleshed out enough to avoid that situation from occurring.
Okay, Representative Wales.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, if we talk with the state auditor about this, this is one thing that they felt would not be a problem. We particularly got this idea from the St. Paul Chamber, who said this would just be, you know, it would be the kind of fight where we're not promoting one vendor over another. We would have the Department of Administration. Their website would be listed. Ties would be listed. The food purchasing would be listed. All of the state co-ops would be listed. So it's not the kind of site where we're promoting vendors. It's the kind of site where we're promoting groups that they could join or become a part of. And so our perspective is that this isn't a conflict of interest, and I would like to think that the organizations that have said that they would like to help support that were sincere when they offered that.
Representative Holbrook.
Ma'am, Chair, or Mr. Chair, and Representative Swales and McFarland, that maybe you should look at some language in your bill that prohibits private entities that stand to benefit from this from participating in the cost of the website.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that comment, and we will examine the language.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Chairman McFarland, a couple months ago, there were some folks that were giving you and I calls about the governor's proposal to have the government procure paper clips for every township and school. And does this have anything to do with that?
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative David. We have looked at that bill, and in fact, I was on the bill and I took my name off because I felt it was too prescriptive. I don't like mandates in this time of cuts and poor economic times. So that's when Representative Greiling decided to have a committee, I jumped on board to be involved with it because there is a lot of sharing of services already going on in this state. And so this is, I think that our bill could be very instrumental in helping with a voluntary program similar to what's in the Senate.
Thank you,
President Davis. Other questions on the bill? Any other questions? The fiscal note is before, and if the cost is reflected in it, is 11 and 4 as was stated, and if the cost from state government perspective is taken out because of previous testimony. So we have the bill before us, House File 1665. Representative Swales renews her motion that House File 1665 be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried. Yes, Representative
Hogan. I'd like to back up a minute.
Sure.
Representative Eakin testified that there wasn't a general fund impact on his last bill, and somebody's provided me with a fiscal note, and I think it's important that there was $11,000, but the agency can't absorb it. So just for the record, to make that clarification.
Representative Holberg, I think he said that there was a cost of it, but that the agency could afford or could absorb that cost. I think it was $5,000, I thought.
Mr. Chair, the amount is $11,000, and as I heard his testimony, I made the assumption it was a special revenue fund as well, but the fiscal note shows it as a general fund expenditure that the agency can absorb, and I think there's a difference.
Okay, well,
no, I think you got the wrong one. Well, I've got $5,000.
And Mr. Chair, the $5,000 was for the school bus. For the waiver on that, and Representative Holberg is correct that it's $11,000, but it would be Bowser. And I was just looking at the previous fiscal note, which did say zero to the general fund for that cost, that Bowser was going to absorb it. But
So, Representative Egan, the $11,000 cost is a general fund cost, but it would be absorbed by the Bowser Board. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And I was just going off of the previous fiscal note, which said zero for the general fund. So I was
very good. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. Okay. Next one on the agenda then is Representative Atkins. You're not on the committee. Let's take you, and then we'll let Nelson suffer here a little bit. Representative Atkins. The chair would move then that House File 65 be House File 1511 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Representative Ashton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Department of Charitable Gambling Policy Bill. There's a couple things that it does. It raises the threshold for the annual audit that charitable gambling organizations have to have done. It employs a star rating system to focus on those, or to call attention to those entities that are really doing a good job of getting their money to the charities. It engages in a perpetual licensing system, so you don't have to reapply every 2 years. They're already keeping an eye on our charitable gambling organizations anyway. They don't have to go through the licensing process on an ongoing basis every 2 years. The reason that it's here is there's a change in a fee and a penalty. What the fee does is it increases the...
Representative Ashton, can I interrupt you?
Absolutely.
Give us the citation.
I would be happy to. There's sections 13 and 15 that apply to the civil penalty.
So 10, page 10, and page 11. Okay, Representative Ashton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the what that allows for under the civil penalty is an increase of $500 to $1,000 penalty, and in particularly egregious cases, up to a $10,000 penalty that both the department and the Allied Charities folks have talked about in our Good West. There's been an agreement with respect to that. There's also Section 34 of the bill, and I apologize for not having the page number immediately.
I think that's 20.
I think you're right, page 20, and that is simply an incentive for local raffles to get their fees in on time. If they get them in on time, it doesn't have any impact on them. If they don't, and unfortunately the board finds that they get some, in fact, Mr. Barrett was telling me, they got one with one day notice. They got it on Friday and they were having a raffle on Saturday. And this just provides an incentive for getting your raffle permit request in 30 days ahead. The fiscal impact is very, very modest. We're $3,000 on the one, I think it's $25,000 on the other. But both to the good, Mr. Chair, you should have the fiscal note in your packet. If you've got any questions or concerns about the bill itself or about the fiscal impact, I can either try to address them. I also have Mr. Barrett from the Gambling Control Board here in case there's technical questions.
Okay, questions at all? Questions on the bill? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, I've been approached by a few of my local charitable gambling that they're saying the fees are too great and it's making it tough for them to stay in the business. Does this help them?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, first off, I don't think that they're concerned about this bill in particular. They're talking about the fees, generally speaking, and more often than not, they're probably actually referring to the tax situation that they face and the amount that they pay overall. There's another bill traveling separately that I don't believe has met with much success, unfortunately, on that front, Representative McNamara. But this bill will not cause them any heartburn or heartache at all.
And is it fair to say that this is a department bill and is also supported by Allied Charities, which is the group that represents the charities? Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is the case.
Other questions on the bill? Any other questions on the bill? If not, then the Chair will renew his motion that House File 1511 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thanks, Mr. Member.
Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson, you want to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 1849 be passed and recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
You've heard the motion. Do you want to explain your bill?
Why we're here is basically sections. Let me get my slide.
Why don't you give us just a very quick overview of what the bill does and then give us the
overview of the bill is it's a mandate reduction. We've been working on this since the beginning of session with local governments, townships, counties, cities. Taking to ease some of the mandates that they have on them, so this is what came out of there. Basically, I walk through here. Section 2 of the bill deals with effective dates for requiring local implementation of new rule. Currently, we pass laws, the rules get put in, and every month a city council or a township could have to change their ordinances to reflect changes we've done in law. This basically says that they'll be able to do that twice a year, January 1st and July 1st. It saves them some money for not having to constantly change in their ordinances. Section 3 of the bill, it has to do with best value contracting, which we passed last year. We put a restriction on it last year that only two projects per year could be done with this. The idea was that as it goes, they started doing this to give them a chance to walk before they ran. It seems to be working okay. The cities and townships have said that, well, some of these things we'd like to do, we don't know till the end of the year which two we're going to do. So this takes off the cap of two per year that they can do. Section 4 of the bill has to do with cost assessed for administrative hearings on election contests at the Office of Administrative Hearing, and that's part of the fiscal impact of the bill. But it's no general fund impact. The only thing we're doing is we're changing the appropriation there from an annual appropriation of $65,000 to a biennial appropriation of $130,000, because after the election contests are front-loaded after the election, and then they have enough money to carry them through. It's just they need the front motor so they can get those done. And the Office of Administrative Hearing is in favor of this provision.
So, Representative Nelson, section 4, is that what you said?
That's section 4, yes.
And so that's the reason it's here.
That's the reason it's here. The other reason it's here is section 1, and section 1 has to do with modifications of... I'm reading this wrong, and it reads different than the fiscal note, so let me get the fiscal note here. Okay, section 1 of the bill has to do with what I just described. And section 4...
Okay.
Yeah, section 1 has to do with what I just described.
Okay.
Section 4 has to do with administrative law hearings, division where they rulemaking, and what they do with that is they charge that back to the agencies that they're making the rules for. So there's basically no fiscal impact there at all, or general fund impact there at all. That's just that there's a $9,000 of cost and a $9,000 charge that goes there.
Okay, members, the fiscal note that you have in there is preliminary, and let me call on staff to clarify that.
Mr. Chair, members, while the fiscal note is preliminary, it is completed by the Administrative Hearings Office, which is the office affected by this. I believe the other agencies that were supposed to fill out the fiscal note have no impact or had indicated no impact on the previous fiscal note. So I think the relevant part of the fiscal note is before you.
Okay, this is a bill that has been through several committees and had who else was working on mandate reduction?
Representative Maury Landing was working on this, and his bill didn't go anywhere in the Senate. Nobody carried it over there, so we rolled his stuff that he was working on into this bill, and moving this forward with the bill that was moving forward in the Senate that Senator Rest is carrying.
Okay, other questions on the bill? Any other questions, Representative Holbrook?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's just a small thing on page 5 about the cemetery. Would that stop somebody who had purchased a plot from being able to use it?
Representative Nelson?
I asked that same question when this came out, and I was told that if they can prove that they got documentation that they bought that plot, they'd be able to bury there. The thing is, with most of these cemeteries, they're old, they're not being taken care of, there's no management company taking care of them anymore. They've fallen back on, there's two provisions in here, one for the counties and one for the township, and they would then be able to stop burial from there, but if the people, I was told, if they have documentation and can prove that they own that lot, they'd allow to be buried there.
All right, thank you.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, on page 6, it talks about compensation. I seem to remember that there was a bill we had before us earlier this year where some cities were trying to be able to lower their pay, in effect, to try to make ends meet. Does this give counties or cities the ability to lower their pay?
Representative Nelson?
Section 6. This page 6. Page 6. It's just talking 6.5. There's actually different parts. And there's a part here. One section deals with cities and townships being able to lower their compensation for their county and board. This section on page 6 deals with Hennepin County being able to lower their salaries of their board members.
Okay. So, follow up, Representative Dean?
But that is the intent.
That is the intent, so. Yeah, that they be able to do so, yeah. Currently in law, they're not allowed to do that.
Thank you.
Any other questions at all? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, on page 4, section 7, the fee is being lowered or being changed here for fence viewers. What are fence viewers?
You don't want to know.
That's so, probably the most controversial part of the bill.
Yeah,
no?
Right.
I guess in townships, and I had to ask the same question, townships where there's a dispute on the property line, they have to, the township board goes out and they view and they determine where the line is and where the fence needs to go up and whether it's being maintained properly. And in the past, there was a cap on what they could charge that did not meet the cost of what they're doing that, and so the townships were having to eat some of that cost. This just allows them to charge back to the property owners involved the cost of actually going out there and doing that and making this determination.
Well, I say that, Representative McNamara, one of my first years in, I carried a fence bill, and I'll never do it again. when you have neighbors, then this addresses neighbors fighting not only the lining up of the fence, but who pays the cost of the fence. If one wants a fence and the other one doesn't want a fence, that's when you really have a conflict. Yes, Representative
Collins. I'm not sure that the people on committee listening about, but my favorite fencing bill was Representative Biggs had an abandoned mine pit somewhere in his district, and there was the people who wanted a fence around it. And so every session we come in and we would put a requirement for fences by the end of the next session. And at some point they said, this is just absolutely ridiculous. Why don't we just take away the requirement? And the answer is, well, if we take away the requirement, it will never get done. You have to have the requirement out there. So I actually rewrote the law so that it was required to be fenced in 2 years, but the date that that 2 years started was always the current date. That actually stayed in state law for several years until somebody found it. I thought that was the greatest way of handling the pension issue.
Okay, any other questions on the bill? Any other questions? Okay, then if not, Representative Mack or Representative Nelson moves to House File 1849. We recommend to pass and place on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Horton. Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll need somebody to move my bill. I have a few co-authors in the room.
Let's get it before us, first of all. We have the unofficial engrossment before us of Senate File Number 99. We have the Senate file in our possession. Okay, the Senate file is in our possession. So the Chair will move the House File, or Senate File 99, we recommend the pass and place on the general registry. Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a pretty simple bill. What it does is it changes the requirement in law from children up to age 4 need to be restrained in a booster seat, and it changes it to 8 or 4 feet 9 inches. So if you have a tall 5, 6, 7-year-old, then they wouldn't be required to be in a booster seat. Otherwise, it changes the age from 4 to 8. It's kind of an update. 44 other states are already at this type of level. And we held the Emergency Medical Services Board harmless. So there's really just a positive $4,000 fiscal impact. And the $4,000 gets spent on providing booster seats through the state patrol.
Any questions? We have a fiscal note in front of us. It's a $5,000 cost to the special revenue fund, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the most current fiscal note, but my understanding is we only have a positive fiscal impact on the traffic safety account.
I'm sorry, it's actually a savings of $5,000 a year. Then look at the parentheses. Questions on the bill? Any questions on this bill? Give you time to take a chance to look at it. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to figure out what the difference between the $5,000 and the $4,000. Are you taking the Senate language, or are you trying to move the House language?
We have the Senate language in front of us right now.
Mr. Chair, what we did is we fixed up the Senate language in finance. I believe we substituted the House file in finance because we had made an improvement. Representative Holbert improved the bill by changing a may waive to a must waive, and then we improved the bill by holding the Emergency Medical Services Board harmless. It was just a $4,000 impact under the Senate language, but under the House language, we hold them harmless because the Emergency Medical Services folks use that money for training purposes.
If somebody could direct me to the fiscal note where it reflects the $4,000 that's in the bill.
Staff, can you help us?
It could be a 4.5, so the 5 is maybe the same thing that I'm talking about as a 4. I can explain where the money comes from.
Representative Holbert, or Representative Hortman. one of those days.
The presumption is that right now when you drive around with kids in your back seat, if they're between the ages of 4 and 8, they're required to be buckled up. And the State Patrol pulls over a certain number of people every year with kids in the back seat from 4 to 8, gives them a ticket for no seatbelt. That's a $25 ticket. What they presume is that if the booster seat bill becomes law, then they would issue the same number of tickets, but instead of a citation under the seatbelt law, it would be a citation under the booster seat law. And then they apportion that between the ages to get the number, and that's where instead of it being a $25 fine, it's a $50 fine, so that $25 increment gets deposited in the booster seat, the traffic safety account.
And is Representative Horvin, the provision that Representative Holbrook added in another committee that says that if you buy the seat, your fine is forgiven. Is that correct? Is that in this bill?
Yep, it makes
and
it like
can
a,
you point that out to
sure,
us?
Sure, it makes it like a fix-it ticket. It's on line 1.20. The may is crossed out and must is inserted. So if within 14 days you show that you have the right seat, then you're fine.
Questions, Representative Holger?
Oh, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad they did that,
yeah.
But I'm still trying to figure out how the fiscal note reflects the language on page 2 of the bill, line 5 of 6.
Yeah. Mr. Mark, can you help us?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I believe if you look on page 3 of the fiscal note, the next to last paragraph says there will be approximately $5,300 increase in revenues collected to the Office of Traffic Safety, and then the amended version of the bill requires that the first $4,000 of fine money be credited to the Emergency Medical Services Relief Account.
Mr. Chair,
Just a second.
Okay,
Representative Holbrook.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's why I'm a little perplexed here, because if you say that the money must, that the fine must be waived, I would assume the revenues coming in are going to go down, not up.
Representative Portman.
Well, the issue with the Emergency Medical Services Board came up because the seatbelt fine was originally allocated to them and the booster seat fine was not allocated to them, but they have not reduced the fiscal note in response to your amendment, if that's your question. They have not assumed less income as a result of your amendment.
Okay. More clarification, Mr. Mark? Any other questions on this?
So, Mr. Chair, I hope they're wrong, because the intent of my amendment was that parents not have to be stocked with a fine because of this violation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, but is the assumption that the fines would remain the same for those under the 4-year-old?
Right.
Is that correct?
So what would get reduced, Representative Holbrook, if you're right and parents aren't fined because they show that they have them, is what would probably end up being reduced is the money available for booster seats.
Okay, any questions at all? Any other questions? Any other questions? If not, then the chair will renew his motion that Senate File 99 be recommended to pass, based on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried.
Thank you.
I could have gone. Let's see. I guess the next one is mine. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 2038 be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry.
Representative Solberg moves House File 2038 be passed. Go ahead and present the bill.
Mr. Chair, this one really has two or three different parts. One of them is some studying of the report on the percentage of reserves that we need to have from the department, Another one is a study of the cash flow account. Any cost of those studies is being carried in the state government finance bill. There was another amendment that was put on in finance, section 2, which says that the Department of Administration must establish a statewide milestones report. And I visited with the department and the commissioner on that. They would like to do that, and they intend to do it. But they said if we have a must in there, it generates a fiscal note. And so at their suggestion, I have an amendment that would change that must to a may, and then a correction also from a should to a must on another part. So I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Okay, Representative Solberg moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? If not, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Amendment approved.
Mr. Chair, this is a fairly simple bill, and it is something that I've worked with the department on. We need to probably have some better information, if we can, on the budget reserves, what makes sense to us, and also for the cash flow account. A few years ago, the cash flow account was established at 350, and then a few years ago we said, well, you can get by at 280, and now it's 350 again, and this will just give us the opportunity to have a full information on what the cash flow reserve could be.
Okay.
A cash flow account.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Any questions? No? If not, Representative Solberg renews his motion that House File 2038 as amended be passed and moved to the General Register.
Yes. Right?
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion approved. Is there any announcements or anything?
Well, you have another bill, I think.
Representative Simon here?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, continue on.
House file number 8. I will move House file number 8 and be moved to the General Register.
Mr. Chair, it's not before us yet, so this will be an informational hearing only.
Okay. Well, then I cancel my motion. And we'll go ahead, Representative Simon, and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, this isn't yet in possession of the committee. It will be after today's floor session. This is the eighth committee hearing for House File 8. The vast majority of you think have seen this or been in committees where this has come before you, but some have not. This is the False Claims Act, and 22 other states and the District of Columbia have it. The federal government has it, and now I think we're close to the final language that I think can be enacted into law. We've had 19 meetings with stakeholders, that's 19, including two with the governor's office, and I think we now have a bill in the shape that the governor can sign it. There were a couple last things that he had wanted in there, and I think we have those now. This is the bill, basically, members, in a nutshell, that enables, that incentivizes whistleblowers who report fraud against the government that is knowing. In other words, those who report knowing fraud. And I need to emphasize that this bill doesn't get at information that, or doesn't get at fraud that is inadvertent or accidental or negligent, only fraud that is knowing. Representative Holberg in the Transportation Finance Division brought up an excellent point about specific dedicated funds in state government, particularly those that are constitutionally dedicated, like the Trunk Highway Fund. And her question, she can speak for herself, but her question in Transportation Finance Division is, what do we do if the victim of the fraud is a specific dedicated fund? Shouldn't they get paid first before money's going to the general fund? And I thought that was a pretty good idea. So in the last committee, we added the amendment, and I've shown Representative Holberg the language. I approached her on the House floor, and she was fine with it, and that is now on the bill. You won't see it on the website right now because that engrossment isn't up yet, because it won't have been processed until our floor session today. But that is now on the bill. We have the Holberg language there, which says that specific dedicated funds like the Trunk Highway Fund, they get paid first. And so with that, members, I think we're here because of the various fiscal notes. One, since the last committee has been changed, and it's been changed in a positive direction. The Department of Transportation, initially, I think it was just a good faith misunderstanding. They had misunderstood what the bill does or doesn't do, and now they have changed their fiscal cost to a fiscal benefit of roughly $20,000. The other two, the Attorney General's office, that was vetted and discussed at length with testimony in Representative Kahn's committee, and then Representative Huntley, who was here, I see, but he could speak to that. In his committee, we talked about the Department of Human Services costs. So I'll stand for questions, members.
All right. Thank you, Representative Simon. Any questions? Yes, Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Simon, I appreciate you addressing the issue of the dedicated funds. I think that makes more sense. I still have some concerns about the fiscal note relative to the Attorney General's office. I don't think the state government finance bill reflects the fiscal note and what they have booked for this. And it seems kind of like a ping pong. I'm not following it as closely as you are, of course. In fact, it's gone to 8 committees. I'm not sure where we're at exactly, but the fiscal note we have in front of us shows over $2 million in cost to the Attorney General. I don't recall what's being booked in state government finance, but can you help me out here?
Sure.
And usually we try and book what a fiscal note says in order to pay for a bill, and I'm not sure that's happening in this case.
Right.
Representative Simon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Holbert, good question. And there was extensive testimony about that in Representative Kahn's committee. And as I said there, and I've said subsequently, I know about very few things in life. One of those very few things is how the Attorney General's office runs. And I know that when we just have a good faith disagreement, I mean, this started out, and I'm not here to get another battle here, but I'm just telling you what my side of the story is, which is that this started out in 2004 as an Attorney General's initiative. In 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, and 2008, and there was never a fiscal note. Now suddenly, for reasons that, you know, others can draw their own conclusions, there's not only a fiscal note, but a huge one, $4 million. I simply disagree that there is a cost to the Attorney General's office, and let me tell you why. Of the 22 states that have a False Claims Act, about half of them are may states and half are shall states as to the Attorney General's role. We consciously chose the may route. Says that the Attorney General of the state, as in the other states, may review these cases as they're filed, these private lawsuits, and decide whether to intervene, not shall. We've looked around at other states, and we couldn't find a single one of the may states, not one, that had a fiscal cost. The shall ones did, or whether there was a specific mandate, but not a may state. And it's just a difference of opinion. I'm not looking to get into a fight about it. I just disagree. And so in Representative Kahn's committee, we decided that the case had not been made, that there was a cost. The Attorney General's argument, as I understand it, and maybe there's someone from that office here who can speak to it, is, well, we're going to want to get involved. But that really isn't good enough for a fiscal note. And Representative Kiffmeyer, a former constitutional officer, obviously was on the committee, Representative Kahn, and we had kind of a fun moment there when I said, you know, if not, you don't book a cost for something you might want to do that you may have the authority to do. And I told her at the time, I said, did you know, Representative Kiffmeyer, that in the statute governing the Secretary of State's office, that office is authorized to hire a stenographer? I don't know if you knew that, members, but right now, in law, it probably went on decades ago, they are authorized to hire a stenographer. And we sort of had a laugh about that, and I said, did you, in your 8 years of Secretary of State, ever have a stenographer? And she said, no. I said, did you carry a fiscal note every year for the cost of a stenographer because it's something you could do? And she said, no. So that's an example of another constitutional office where we don't have fiscal notes for things that you might want to do, that you're authorized to do, but you're not required to do. And this is one of those. So we just have a good faith disagreement. I'm sure the office has its own, again, good faith reasons why they think there's a cost. I'm not questioning their motives, but we just have a disagreement.
To this point, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I've had a lot of problems with the new attitude we've taken towards fiscal notes. At one point, we used to say, what a fiscal note told you, especially the ones that get up into the millions, rather the ones that may be 73,920 when you believe that maybe they thought about it. But a fiscal note in the millions only tells you whether the agency wants to do it or not. And what we did, and particularly with the May, and we used to disregard fiscal notes with much more impunity than we do these days. And I don't know when the program, when that program started, but I think we're always ready to see if we were wrong when we come back. That's why we meet every year. And the and I think what we ended up doing in, say, government finance, I don't remember the numbers, something a little over 900,000 that we appropriated for those, this bill and for Representative Winkler, who has a slightly different bill, which also had some large fiscal note. And the thought was, well, both of these things are going, we hope, are going into state law, and just go as far as you can. You know, 900,000 lets you hire a bunch of people, and it lets you do a lot of planning, and it lets you, and it certainly lets you get started before you come back to us next year. And I think did you mention it in this committee yet about the money that we get just for passing the bill? Why don't you say
right. Representative Fund. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apart from the money, and yes, I should have mentioned that, though I believe there is not any cost to the Attorney General's office, Representative Kahn has persuaded me that we might want to throw a few bucks their way anyway. And in her bill, and I'm a conferee on that bill, there is just shy of $800,000 for my bill and Representative Winkler's bill for the Attorney General's office, which I think is very generous considering the fact that I don't think there ought to be any more cost. Another reason why I don't think, particularly in the first biennium, there would be any cost to the Attorney General's office is we took retroactivity out of the bill, meaning this only applies to conduct arising on or after the effective date August 1st, 2009. And there is almost no chance that on August 2nd, 2009, anyone's going to file a lawsuit under this act were it to be enacted. I would say it's very unlikely in the first year, maybe even the first 2 years, that any lawsuit would be filed under this simply because damages have not accrued. So I think it's very unlikely, certainly in this biennium, that there are going to be any costs whatsoever. That said, Representative Kahn has set aside some money for them just in case there are costs, and that's in that bill. In terms of Representative Kahn, what you mentioned, and many of you heard me say this in other committees, the good part about this bill is we get a bonus just for passing the bill from the federal government. It's about $2 million a year, roughly, if you go by historic averages. I can explain why that is. Many of you have heard it. But just Congress decreed back in 2006 that states that pass the False Claims Act will get a bonus, and ours would be about $2 million a year. And that's if the law is never used. If no person ever comes forward and ever invokes or uses the law, just as a reward for passing it, we get about $2 million a year.
Thank you. Representative Holbert, follow-up question?
Thank you. I guess it's just a question of Representative Holbert, given that you're the gatekeeper of the fiscal notes, and in general you like to have things paid for. I'm just wondering if you could comment about this particular bill and what your thoughts are, if you feel that we're setting a precedent here by not fully funding it, to buy into Representative Kahn's institutional knowledge. If you can just help us understand what your thoughts are relative to this bill and its fiscal implications.
Well, I do take some Representative Holbert, Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, some direction also from staff, and they always remind us that fiscal notes are advisory. But I do think also we need to be very careful about not ignoring them. And if this had been ignored in its entirety, I think I would have had a great deal of difficulty with it. I have listened to the arguments on both sides of this particular question, and feel comfortable at least there are recognition of some costs. The same thing happens in this bill as happened in my little bill that I had. When I had a must in there, the department said that we have to develop a fiscal note of about $87,000. They said, we want to do this and we'll probably do it, but if you take the must out, that gives us the flexibility to not do that. So they went down to zero on a fiscal note. As my understanding in this one, it is not mandatory for the Attorney General to be able to do that particular cost. So as I look at the fiscal note as well, I haven't studied it exactly, but on page 3 of it, in the bottom of the page, it looks like the whistleblower is entitled to receive 15% to 25% if the Attorney General intervenes in the case, and 25% to 30% of the recovery if the Attorney General does not intervene in the onset. So there must be maybe the Attorney General would be able to have that flexibility to see if this is an egregious case and if it's within their budget or within the $800,000 that has been appropriated for. That's the best answer I can give you right now as it goes forward. We know that fiscal notes changed. In fact, is it just changed as of Friday? About to cut it in half, I think. So you're right. I was deeply concerned about the first cost. I'm comfortable now with this as it goes forward. That doesn't mean that I'm always 100% comfortable, but I think with that changes that have been made in the fiscal note, I think that we're addressing the issue.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, and part of the problem that we get into in this is, and this goes back between whether we want revolving funds for everything or whether we can just trust our accounting process. But the Attorney General spends the money from their appropriation, but if there's a return on this, it goes into the general fund. Now, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. We can be able to, it's all accounted for, and we can see that account. But there is this, there is this problem as far as the Attorney General is concerned. They may spend money, and they'll never see it back. But we ought to be able to deal with that in as we go through the budgeting process. And we ought to be able to balance that in our fund balance. But I think these kinds of things, particularly as we get more computer adept, maybe we'll be able to do that a little bit more.
Representative Fulbert, follow up.
Well, then this is just a process question. Do you want us to save this document? Or are we going to have a new version after the floor? Or?
Representative Fulbert or Simon?
Well, I think this is the latest one. The fiscal note? Oh, I'm sorry. The bill will not change any that comes through. Mr. Chair, does this reflect all the amendments that have been on?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the. I think I don't have the engrossment in front of me that does that. And I'm looking at the one I have. Do you have the second engrossment? Is that the one you have?
Yes.
Okay, that one would not reflect the amendment put on in the last committee. I have a copy of that amendment to the committee. I thought that might happen. Okay. I'm happy to share now or whenever the chair would like. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, would you indicate what the amendments are so we have a complete understanding and discussion of the bill that we will have before us?
Yes. In fact, I could have a page pass this out. This is the amendment that did go on in the other committee. And I can just walk you through what the changes were. I'll just give them 30 seconds here to make sure everyone can look along. But again, to repeat, this did go on. So the next engrossment, which isn't online and won't be until after today's floor session because it will have been processed at that time, this is the amendment that actually did go on. And I can just walk you through the basics. The key thing is, again, in consultation with the governor's office, the governor wanted us to be exactly like the Fed, no more, no less, in terms of the fees or the penalties, and we did that. So we went from $5,500 to $5,000 on line 1.4 and $11,000 to $10,000 on line 1.4 and 1.5. That was something that the governor wanted. That's in there now. The other thing is we got rid of entirely any mention in the bill for inadvertence, negligence, accidents, mistake. That's all gone now. So the only way anyone can be liable here is if they have knowingly defrauded, and that's defined in the law. So that's in there as well, and that's line 1.7. We deleted that clause and then renumbered in line 1.8. Then we tweaked the language on the liability portion on line 1.10 and 1.11 and just said there shall be no action against any person under the section for inadvertence or mistake. And then a key concession in here, members, was line 1.12. I would imagine this is now the most pro-defendant, not pro-plaintiff, pro-defendant attorney fee provision, I'm guessing, in state law. And that was a huge concession. It now says that attorney fees can be awarded not just if a plaintiff's lawsuit was solely for the purposes of harassment or annoyance, but here if it's in substantial part due to harassment or annoyance. And that means it could be less than the majority. So if a judge determines, for example, that 35% of the reason this unsuccessful plaintiff brought the lawsuit was to harass and annoy, the judge might say, you know, that's substantial. 35% is substantial, and we're going to award attorney's fees to the plaintiff, or to the defendant, rather, and against the plaintiff if the plaintiff bought it for an improper purpose. And that is huge. I know of no other place in state law where that exists. That was a major concession. So that's in there now. And then lines 1.14 to 1.21 again on the bill now. That's the Holberg language, which I thought was an excellent suggestion about making sure the dedicated funds are paid and not the general fund. So that's it, members. Again, this is on the bill right now. So you'll see that in the next engrossment.
Okay. Any other questions for Representative Simon? If not, Representative Silver, do you have any announcements to make as far as when you expect the meeting next time?
Well, as we stated earlier, Mr. Chair, we're probably in a fluid situation. Unless we have an opportunity to meet tonight, and we'll coordinate that with Representative Holberg as well to make sure that we're not interfering with conference committees and everything like and with the leadership. What my expectation is we should go into recess, and of course if we don't meet, we're automatically adjourned at 7 o'clock in the morning or something like that. But that gives us the flexibility of coming back for this particular bill. And otherwise, I think we would probably be meeting Wednesday sometime.
Okay. Thank you. If there's no further action, we will stand in recess to the call of the chair.
Hey, Corey.
Questions or additional discussion? If not, then I will renew my motion, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed?
No.
And carried. And members, thank you for coming over and getting this off. And the committee is adjourned.